This case number 60455, Wright v. State. Mr. Flynn, are you ready to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I would like to take 4 minutes for rebuttal.
And just to remind you, the clock before you does not reserve your 4 minutes separately. So when you see 4 minutes on there, you're
I'll try my best, Your Honor. And thank you for hearing this case today, which is an important case to my client. The issue to be decided today is whether or not the statute in effect at the time my client filed a petition to restore his rights under NRS 213.157 should apply, or the statute which was in effect at the time the petition was granted should apply, and the statute changed effective July 1st, 2003. And the record reflects that my client filed a petition to restore his civil rights under NRS 213.157 in February of 2003 through the Division of Parole and Probation. At the time that the petition was filed, the statute said that upon receiving an application pursuant to subsection 2, the court shall, as soon as reasonably practicable, restore the civil rights of the applicant and release him from all penalties and disabilities which resulted from the offense or crime of which he was convicted. So at the time that the petition was filed, more than just civil rights were restored. It said that all civil rights must be restored and release him from all penalties and disabilities which resulted from the offense of crime which he was convicted. In 2003, the legislature changed that statute, effective July 1st, 2003, and it doesn't mention anything about penalties and disabilities. It simply states that only certain civil rights are restored. Those civil rights are the right to vote, the right to serve as a juror in a civil action, and then there's a delayed period for restoring the right to hold office and restoring the right to serve as a juror in a criminal action. And so what happened in this case, Your Honors, is that the petition was filed in February 2003, and normally they're granted as or automatically by a court because of the way the statute was written at the time the petition was filed. It said the court shall, as soon as reasonably practicable, restore the civil rights of the applicant and release him from all penalties and disabilities which resulted from the offense or crime. What happened here was the state opposed the petition, and the record reflects that this was the first time that this had happened, according to the officer from the Division of Parole and Probation who was handling the case, because there really is no mechanism to even oppose such a petition as of the statute as it was written prior to July 1st, 2003. It was basically a mandatory act that the court was required to just enter an order restoring the rights as it read at the time the petition was filed. The state was concerned that my client would be restored to certain rights, like the right to own a gun and to be free from sex offender registration. And I would submit that those issues were simply irrelevant at the time that the petition was filed, and really are irrelevant today.
Well, because you're reading penalties and disabilities to encompass sex offender registration. If we disagree with that reading, then it didn't matter, correct?
No, Your Honor. I'm not reading penalties and disabilities today as letting my client necessarily be free from sex offender registration or have the right to own a gun, because I don't believe that that was an issue that should have been before the court in 2003, nor is it really an issue before the court today, because I think what my client would have to do is, if the court were to accept this appeal, remand to the district court, and find that the order should have been entered under the statute as it was in effect in before July 1st, 2003.
At the time of filing.
At the time of filing the petition, then my client would then have a new order in place, and if he felt that he was harmed by sex offender registration requirements, or if you wanted to own a gun, he would have to petition, or he would have to at that time try to be able to own a gun, or file some type of debt relief action to say that he's free from sex offender registration requirements. In other words, the only thing that my client wants today, and at the time the petition was filed, is just to have the statute that was in effect that said that his rights are restored and that he's released from all penalties and disabilities. And so that's what's at issue. And
but if we don't agree that there are theoretical rights under the 2001 version of the statute that were available to him if the court had applied that statute as opposed to the later version of it, then why is your client aggrieved?
Your Honor, and I've asked myself that question, and I have some answers for you, because the way I look at it is, what greater rights was would my client get under the statute in effect at the time the petition was filed versus the time
of
when
the
letter
was entered? We didn't even have the 2003 statute.
Yes, and so I found just a couple of examples. If you wanted to become a bail enforcement agent, for example, in the state of Nevada, under NRS 697.173, it says that a person is not entitled to receive, renew, or hold a license of a bail enforcement agent if they have been convicted of a felony in this state. And so that's one example. There's another example that I found. These are just a couple of things I was looking at. My client wanted to become a gaming employee or hold certain licenses as a gaming employee. NRS 463.335, Section 12, basically would let the board suspend or object to the registration of an applicant as a gaming employee for any cause deemed reasonable, but the board may object or suspend the registration if the applicant has committed a felony, is one of the things under subsection 12D. And so there are certain licenses my client might not be able to get as a result of having penalties and disabilities associated with his conviction. And so what I'm here to argue for today is that my clients simply have the right to be free from all penalties and disabilities that would have existed prior to the change in the statute in July 1st, 2003. And it would be up to my client to file some type of debt relief action in court if, in fact, he were harmed by, let's say, he wanted to become a bail enforcement agent and he was denied the right to a license. I think he could challenge that and say, I'm free. I should be free from all penalties and disabilities of my offense. And so you state can't hold this against me by enacting this law based upon the restoration of rights my client should have received at the time the petition was filed. And so back to the, you know, issue of when the petition was filed, the district court normally would have just entered an order saying your rights are restored as of the statute in effect at the time your application was filed. And instead, everybody got caught up in, can you have the right to hold a gun if we enter your restoration of rights under the old law versus the new law? And
there was an agreement he didn't care about that, right?
Well, I think that my client was arguing in the record that that wasn't an issue. Yeah, in the case. And so
maybe I'm overstating
it. I don't want to say that my client wouldn't necessarily want to have the right to hold a gun, but I believe he should be able to have the correct restoration of rights order in place and then be able to see if he wants to hold a gun, should he choose to want to hold a gun. Right now he can't. Right now there's a restoration of rights order in effect that only gives him certain civil rights, and those are the rights to vote and to serve as a juror in a civil action and a criminal action as well, and to hold office. And I think that if you look at the statute as it was written before it was amended, we have to give effect to the language where it says in subsection 3, NRS 213.157, subsection 3, where it says that upon receiving an application, the court shall restore the civil rights of the applicant and release him from all penalties and disabilities. And what that means to me, as with the and, that there's more rights that you get under the old statute than you do under the new statute. The new statute, as effective July 1st, 2003, was only addressing civil rights, whereas the statute, in effect, prior to July 1st, 2003, had an and, where you're released from all penalties and disabilities. And so when we go back to what the district court did, the district court was considering whether or not, you know, you could have these, whether or not certain rights would be within the penalties and disabilities, but I just don't think that that was correct for the district court to do. I think the district court didn't have discretion as to whether or not it should enter an order under the statute at the time the petition was filed versus the statute as of the time the order was filed, because it was, there was mandatory language in the petition. And it wasn't like this petition was filed the day before the statute changed. The petition was filed February of 2003, several months before the statute changed. And it was only because of this delay where there was briefing on the issue, and then there was two different hearings in September of 2003 that an order was entered under the revised statute.
There was, the order wasn't entered for like 9 years, right?
Well, that's another issue, Your Honor. And I was talking to my client about that, and I said, what happened? Why did it take 9 years from the oral pronouncement of the decision to get an order entered? And
you
my,
can't go outside the record.
I'm not, Your Honor. And so,
yeah,
you know,
the
record doesn't reflect actually what happened
then, I guess
in that nine-year period. The record does reflect that it took 9 years to actually get the order entered.
The record does suggest that the judge asked your client's then counsel to prepare that order, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and the record does reflect that an order was originally submitted under the statute that was in effect at the time the petition was filed. The judge rejected that order, and then the judge asked for a different order, and so it did take 9 years for an order to get entered. But my main issue here is I don't even think the judge should have waited until September of 2003 to issue an oral pronouncement. The judge should have been required at the time the petition was filed and that it came before him.
It was a ministerial act.
It was a ministerial act. There was no discretion under the statute. My client is aggrieved because there is a statute in place at the time the petition was filed that gave him greater rights than the statute as amended. And my client simply wants the right to have his rights restored under that old statute and then do as he sees fit, which may be to get a certain type of business license or to even hold a gun if he chose to do so. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes and two minutes and 28 seconds remaining.
Thank you.
Mr. Mills.
Thank you. Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court. Mr. Wright, in this matter, was originally convicted of two counts of sexual assault, two counts of lewdness. He subsequently obtained some post-conviction habeas relief and eventually wound up entering a plea of to lewdness with a minor. He was given time served, 8.5 years. So under the facts, he was not just honorably discharged from parole. It was a time served. For what we hear from the appellant, that they filed this petition under 157, when you actually look at the petition, it was not filed under 157. It was filed under 155.
But the district judge read it as if it were under 157, I think.
Right? He did, once he got to the actual hearings. But from the four corners of that document, when that landed on his desk, there was the state would submit that the court was right to question it, was right to take a look at this and set it for a hearing. Because from the four corners of this document, how could he grant this petition knowing what he knew from the case? And so, and we never had any type of motion to amend this petition. The appellant in their arguments say that this isn't really a petition. It's not really first pleading. It's more akin to a motion. But it's entitled, it's petition, and it, to the state's belief, it's an original pleading. And it could have been amended at any time.
Right, but you're not cross-appealing, and you're not saying they shouldn't have done it. So to me, the more crucial focus would be the points that your opposing colleague was making, which is he claims his client was aggrieved by being processed under the 2003 statute instead of the 2001. Why?
Correct, Justice Pickering. And so, which gets, I think, to the point of whether this really is moot. What is the right difference between the rights that was given to Mr. Wright under the 2003 statute and what was there in 2001? And we have this phrase that our legislature used that is not defined, and there's very limited holdings from this court as to what that means. At one point in, I believe it was Hand versus State, this Supreme Court addressed that in the context of a ex felon in possession statute. I suspect that the meaning in that statute was probably on Judge Blake's mind. He did write that opinion for the Supreme Court governor appointed justice for that case, but held that turn of phrase, released from all penalties and disabilities, wouldn't apply to an ex-felon in possession. And certainly that thinking from that case could be also applied to the examples highlighted by my colleague as for what other disabilities he might have been released from. That same thinking may not have released him, and that same reasoning from that case may not have released him from his ability to get a bail license agent. Because if you think about it, under 2001, if you were convicted of, let's take it outside this case a little bit, convicted of murder or sexual assault or kidnapping, and you received a definite sentence, which back in that time frame, the state had a lot of those definite sentence type sentences, you would have been automatically eligible to vote to be a juror in 2001 if you'd been convicted of murder. Does that apply, and was it the legislature's intention when they enacted that 2001 statute to make that so broadly apply to all these facts and circumstances? Or if you look at the intention of the legislatures, and I think it was Assemblywoman, I'm going to butcher her name because I can't pronounce it, June Kiliani from Las Vegas, who pushed this bill through, and it was her concern that ex-felons who are out there, they're not able to work, and that this could be a real impediment to them. That was the concern that the legislature was attempting to address when they enacted this statute. So the state would submit that the order that Judge Blake signed was, while it's certainly more specific, it certainly gave Mr. Wright all the rights that he would have been entitled to under the 2001 statute with more specificity. And I think while you look at the 2003 legislative history, that history's more lacking with respect to this change that they made in the statute as far as what they were trying to change, or if there was issues they were trying to change. That's not really clear from my review of the legislative history.
Do you agree with your opponent that the district court should have applied the 2001 version of the statute? So your argument is just no harm, no foul, or are you saying it was legitimate to apply the 2003 statute?
Well, under the 2001 statute, the legislature clearly said it was applicable to, I think, all petitions filed after, I think it was June of 2001. And so if, just from the plain reading of the law, that was the applicable statute.
The 2001 version?
2001 version.
So you agree that that version applies, or should have applied?
Should have applied to a petition that was filed correctly under 157, which this petition was not, which leads us into that area that we have here.
So you say it wasn't really filed until it was sort of de facto amended, and that postdated the 2001. Is that the argument?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, and one of the things that I just want to touch on is that, and I think this is kind of within the record, it's just the Third Judicial District was at that time the circuit court. And as this court will recall, which means that the district court judge was not necessarily in the Churchill County Courthouse all the time. Those two judges would rotate. And depending on their calendar, things might not always get in front of the calendar as quick as you might expect if it was that was the home base. And that was not Judge Blake's home base. And so when you see some of these timelines that the counsel alludes to, that months went by, that's not unusual, I would submit, for a court's calendar in trying to hear a very important case. I mean, this is an important case to everybody involved, to Mr. Wright, to the state, and there's a lot of policy considerations that we believe that the district court properly considered, and eventually he wound up granting Mr. Wright's a petition.
If you were writing an order in this case that applied the 2001 statute, how would you resolve it? What would you say? What are you asking us to do?
Or not to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the state's asking you to just dismiss this really as moot. I mean, he had this issue, he has been granted the rights, there's really nothing more. What I really think the petitioner's asking you for, and they wouldn't commit to it, is I believe they think, and they'd like to litigate this for another day, that this extra phrase really means that he is not subject to the sex offender registration, not subject to ex felony possession. What I hear today is that they think that's a question for a different day that they'd like to advocate later on and not have to answer.
Could you make for me a textual case reading the language of the 2001 version of the statute that indeed disabilities and penalties don't encompass anything that he didn't get by virtue of the order that he did get? Do you follow the question? A little awkward.
I'm not sure. Clearly, I mean, when somebody's sent to prison, they're under a disability.
Right.
They're incarcerated. And so textually, I think that turn of phrase applies to some of that. They're no longer subject to the disability of being confined, being subject to the jurisdiction of parole or probation or any of those types of things.
Or being the ability to run for public office, for example. That would be a disability?
A
penalty?
It could be a disability or a penalty, yes. And so that is the I think the textual reading of that. But when you get back, and I was just...
But do you think that that language applies to sex offender registration? Do you think that that's
no.
a disability or penalty? Why not?
I would... because I think that the sex offender registration, number one, it's a subsequent enacted statute. It refers to whether you've been convicted of a felony, regardless of what's happened in the interim years. And so that is a separate thing. And I don't believe even if you had this, that would free him from that, even had that language in there. But I think that's what the defendant's hoping.
And that's what the district court, the dialogue in the district court seemed focused on that.
I agree with you, Justice Pickering, yes. So unless I have any other questions from the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bloom, you have 2 minutes and 28 seconds.
Thank you. I just wanted to address the petition issue very quickly. The petition, and I'm on page 1803 of the record, does state that it was filed under NRS 213.155. And, of course, at the time the petition was filed, it was not filed necessarily by my client. It was filed by the Division of Probation and Parole. And if you look at paragraph 2 on that page, it says that on July 11, 2000, John Owen Wright was released from the Department of Corrections after his sentence was served. And the reason that is important is that 213.157 applied to once your sentence is served, you get your rights restored under 157. 155 applied to discharge of parole. And so 155 really was inapplicable. I think this was just a typo in the petition. And the district court ended up treating it as one filed under 157, which was correct because my client's sentence had already been completed and it had been served at the time the petition was filed. So I believe that the petition was correctly filed. There was just a typo in the petition. And I would submit that this could just have been a form they were using when they were submitting these restoration of rights applications. The other issue I wanted to address is Hand versus State. In that case, this court said that the defendant in that case had never actually petitioned to have their rights restored. And so rights had not been restored in Hand versus State. And my client, in this case, is seeking to have his rights restored. So I would say that my client still has an argument to make that he should be able to own a gun if he wanted to do so, notwithstanding the holding of Hand versus State. As far as the penalties and disabilities language, again, I would submit that it has to mean something. Under the statute as of 2001, there was an and. It said restore civil rights and release him from all penalties and disabilities.
So you see the registration as penalty and disability?
Well, Your Honor, I would, you know, I think I've read case law that would say that sex offender registration is not a penalty.
Correct.
I think there's an argument to be made that it qualifies as a disability. And I haven't seen anything that would say to the otherwise, Your Honor. So, unless there's any further questions.
Thank you very much
you.
For your briefing, your arguments here today. This matter will stand submitted.